October 27th. I'm David Rosberg of Niagara Capital Partners. With me is Al Friedberg, the Chief Investment Officer of the Friedberg Mercantile Group. Good morning, Al. How are you this morning?
Good morning.
Good morning. What we're going to do is follow our usual format. I'm going to be a bit of an interlocutor and quiz Al on his views of the global economy. And we're going to then, at the end, address any questions that have been emailed to us. If you have any questions during the course of our talk, please email them to erot@niagaracapital.ca. That's erot@niagaracapital.ca. We'll try and speak for 40 minutes, keep it brief, and let everybody get back to work. And without further ado, let's get started. Al, let's begin with talking about a little bit of background. We're entering into what some people are considering an historic moment, with the Fed going into an area which, by their own admission, is uncharted territory. What are your views about this?
Okay. Let me first say that the economy is continuing to experience a slowdown, and it looks now that the fourth quarter of the year will be down to like a 1% annual rate of growth. But everybody's very impatient. It's a feature of recent years that impatience has been the real problem here. Even though there is a good understanding that the U.S. must deleverage, must deliver, that the U.S. savings rate has to go higher. And yet, having said that, Washington is intent in making sure that that we grow and that we grow quickly. And the only way to do that is to stimulate. And all we hear about is stimulus. So even though the present conditions are normal and are as they should be, especially not only in absolute terms but even relative terms, the U.S. should be growing a little less or a little slower than the rest of the world. But there is no feeling anywhere in Washington that we should be doing that. And so in the background here is that the government and, but more importantly, the monetary authorities, because the fiscal side has been spent practically, the fiscal side, the monetary side is the one that has to bear now the burden of the stimulus. And so we're looking at what can the Fed do to re-accelerate growth here? Let me just add something here that you know, our readers and our clients know that we are very serious about following monetary policy, and I just want to give a little bit of a background to this monetary event. I want to speak about what is happening on the monetary front. When quantitative easing phase one started, and for months subsequent to that, there was a great deal of skepticism about the power or the ability of the central bank to reflate the economy. Meaning, when I speak about reflate, I don't mean reflate in terms of so much in terms of economic growth, but in terms of avoiding a deflation or getting out of a disinflation. The doubts centered around the ability of banks to expand their balance sheet. And it was pretty clear that banks were still had experienced a traumatic had gone through a traumatic experience, and therefore they were not about to expand their loans to the private sector, or they weren't going to do that in very quickly. And so we saw months of fairly large drops in credit to the private sector. So given that, people thought that the banking system is broken, and that if it's broken, doesn't matter how much money the Fed would pump into the economy, actually the money would end up in bank reserves. These bank reserves would be sitting at the Fed. They would be unused. It's technically called free excess reserves, and nothing would happen from there. In effect, this is true. This is what happened for many months. For many months, banks sat on excess reserves and shrunk their balance sheets a little bit, got a little more comfortable with what's happening. And we had very, very low real growth of money. You'll recall that I wrote about that in a number of quarterly letters, where money growth had almost stagnated to zero. Its growth rate went down to zero practically. And not only broad money, but even narrow money had even shown signs of going into negative territory. Now, that had potentially significant implications, because money shrinking would actually reinforce the disinflationary and eventually the deflationary forces, and would leave us with a serious problem, according to the Fed. I mean, I should add something in parenthesis. Mild deflation is nothing. There's nothing wrong with mild deflation. Absolutely nothing wrong. Japan has had it for the last 15 years, and the truth is that there've been surveys to the Japanese consumer asking how do they like this deflation, and more than two-thirds have been happy with it. They say it's fine, and it makes very little difference once you get used to whether prices are going up 1 or 2% a year or going down 1 or 2% a year. And in fact, it's better for savers if prices go down 1 or 2% a year. And so we really shouldn't be too afraid of deflation. If there's a feeling, the present policymakers equate deflation with what happened in the 30s, but what happened in the 30s was totally different. I mean, what happened in the 30s, you had an enormous drop in the money supply. More than a third. I believe it was a 33% drop in money. And prices went down, but that was just liquidation across the board because of the drop in money. The deflation in Japan has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with that deflation that the U.S. experienced in the 30s. Be that as it may, the Fed is concerned about deflation, and the stagnation of money that I was referring to before created a problem for them, because I'm not really sure that they're looking at money supply numbers so closely, but at any rate, it did reinforce the possibility that we were heading into some type of a mild deflation. We ourselves positioned ourselves in a more defensive way, thinking that this could happen, and waited to see what would eventually happen with these free reserves that the banks had. Well, textbooks say that banks don't sit on money, on free money, without lending it out. I mean, they're profit-seeking institutions, and if they only earn zero, or they only earn 0.25% a year by sitting at the Fed, and they can earn maybe 3% or maybe 4% by lending it, or they can earn 2% or 3% by buying treasuries, that's what they're going to do eventually, as soon as they gain a little bit of courage. And it took a few months, and in fact, this is what's happening. The commercial banks are still a little bit gun-shy when it comes to private credit, but they have bought a tremendous amount of treasuries. And the result is that money supply started to grow. And the latest numbers, and we look at them every week, show that broad money is increasing at a rate of almost 8% per annum over the past 8 weeks, and we now have a year-over-year number that's between 3 and 4%, and that's a major difference. That's a major change from where we were, say, 6 months ago. Narrow money is increasing at an even faster rate. So, for the background, a slowing economy, a consumer who still wants a deliver, money beginning to grow, so QE1 or quantitative easing 1 worked, and it's working, at least as far as expanding money and avoiding a deflation. In addition to that, all that money that's created, or most of the money that's created, seems to be flowing abroad, and what it's doing is ending up in central banks abroad, who desperate not to see their currencies go up, intervene in the market, and therefore absorb those dollars, but convert those dollars into local currency in the process. And what we are doing, in effect, is we are exporting inflation to the rest of the world. So even though the Fed has not been successful yet in getting inflation to start in the U.S., but they have been extremely successful in seeing that this money is creating inflation everywhere else. And so most of the major developing countries are now experiencing a very fast rate of inflation, and it's in the process of getting even faster. So we have managed to do something great. We're not very good at exporting these days, but we are exporting inflation very successfully. Okay, so that should answer, I think, your brief question, right?
But background.
Yeah.
And we also discussed the monetary situation. Now, while the experience in Japan may not be similar to the experience in the United States in the 1930s, the New York Times 2 weeks ago had as the headline in its business section, and I think actually in the front page, a description of Japan and talking about the deflation in terms of its dampening the animal spirits and its constraints on risk-taking. And it turned the country into a much more passive nation. And I had this feeling when I read that, and I'm sure many others did as well, that it's a kind of lobbying effort that they're directing toward the Fed for its meeting on November the 3rd, or its decision on November the 3rd. What do you think the Fed is going to do?
Okay, I just want to make a cute remark about this Japan and the lack of animal spirits. They are getting older.